This is the third part of a series I've been doing on things that matter. Why elections matter, why love matters, and today, why matter matters. And a lot of people think that philosophy and theology are just kind of silly abstractions that don't have real-world consequences. But they do have consequences. How we think, how we feel, how we picture our world makes a difference in how we react to the world, to each other, and to our lives. If I say, for example, the word, and I understand that I'm in church, so this is a little iffy, but bear with me. If I say the word God, what did you see in your head? I studied with some very renowned theologians who do not picture God when they think about God as a white man in a white beard sitting on a golden throne. But when you hear the word, we get this picture in our Western heads of Zeus. Deus Pater, God the Father, is derived from Jupiter, which is derived from Zeus Pitar. In a sense, the picture in our head is of Zeus. And frequently when people get into the big arguments about, do you believe in God or not, what they're really talking about is, do you believe in Zeus or not? Which most of the people in this room, I'm going to guess, are not devotees of Zeus. But these pictures, these images, and the theologies and philosophies behind them make a difference about how we are in the world. If God is going... Who can I pick? My president. If God is going to damn you... No secret message or code here. If God is going to damn you, why should I be kind to you? If God hates you and is going to burn you, why should I feed you when you're hungry, clothe you when you're naked, support you? My theology makes a difference in how I think about myself, my responsibilities, my world, and how I think about you. When we look at various religions and religious traditions and how they have been interpreted and misinterpreted and bent, you see that suffering is deserved if you have Zeus in the sky. If you are doing badly in life, I don't know why, but God knows, and God must have his male white plan for this, and it would be impious of me to do otherwise. When Job is suffering, Job's friends hang around for a while, and then they start to practice theology. And they go, you know, Job, we thought you were a pretty neat guy, but you're suffering, and since God is just and you're suffering must be just and you can't be nearly as neat as we thought. So you deserve the suffering in the great cosmic scheme of things. Theology makes a difference. West and East, in Hinduism, the untouchables are untouchables for what they did in a past life, and why would I mess with their karma? We have to think about how we think and picture and react to these ideas that seem to be really natural. One of the longest running traditions, and why I feel that I have to speak out today in favor of material existence, is that most religions have had a component where they have dissed, that's the technical theological term, that they have dissed material existence, that they saw that there had to be two ways of being. There had to be the physical, material way of being, the way of being that gets old, that gets tired, that breaks down, that things go wrong with, things fall apart. And there had to be perfect, spiritual, eternal existence that was much better. You see this very clearly in Greek philosophy. You see it very clearly, particularly with Plato, where you have the ideal world of forms, and they are eternal, and they are perfect and flawless. And then you have this shadowed world of material existence, which is incomplete. And everything that we can possibly know about material existence falls short of the glory of infinite and eternal perfection up in the sky. And again, this kind of thing makes a difference. What is the nature of suffering if there is another eternal and perfect world? If you are ill, if you are starving, if our world is broken, why fix it? If God is going to come in the greatest urban renewal project and sweep the material world away, bring the mountains down low, fill the valleys in, the sea will be no more, and there will be this perfect spherical perfection. If our suffering is but just a momentary lingering in the anteroom of eternity, why worry about disease? Why take care of yourself? What in the world are you doing running a marathon? Why would you suffer like that? Why go to a doctor? Why try to save the trees or the seas or each other if there is a better world to come? Every religion has wrestled with these issues. In the Hebrew Scriptures, it's no different. In the Hebrew Scriptures, you have two stories of creation. One of them, kind of that perfect, ideal one, where God says, "Let there be, and there is," and you have the world, and you have everything created by the Word. And then you have a second one in Genesis 2, where God gets down and dirty and molds the clay and gets his hands dirty and makes material existence. There are two different kinds of existence that are posited even within the basis of our what we call our Western religions. And for the most part, they have looked at material existence as something vastly inferior. There's a price. There is a cost in the quality of our lives and our interactions when we feel disjointed. If we hate our bodies, how can we love each other? If we hate this world, it's the same as saying to somebody, well, God is going to damn you. If this world is transitory imperfection and just the waiting room for a better world, that has consequences in how we spend our time, in how we think about our lives, in how we think about our world, in how we think about and most importantly engage issues of social justice and each other's health and happiness and our relationship to one another in this beautiful and imperfected world that waits for our involvement, that needs our involvement, because the material is what we know, not completely separated from areas of the spirit. Ancient philosophers understood that there was a place where spirit and material met. And you know where that was? That was this morning. Thank you. As I prepared this service, I was actually coincidentally listening to that very music because I play classical music when I do my sermon preparation. And as far back as Pythagoras, philosophers speculated on the place where the material and the spiritual meet are in our lives, but the greatest metaphor for that was music, which combines numbers and something ephemeral, but that touches us and gets both a physical and an emotional reaction. The radical separation of the material and the spiritual seems to me to be a false dichotomy and one of the great problems with how we have, in almost every religion, tried to separate the material and the spiritual. Spinoza tries to unite them. Spinoza comes up with an image, a metaphor, a picture, which I think is useful. It doesn't replace everything else, but it's another way of looking at existence other than we have the base, mortal, material, and the perfect, eternal, spiritual. And he says, you know, existence is very much like being part of a sea. If you have divinity that is outside of existence, and you have material existence here, what is the relationship? This is degraded and this is unreachable. What Spinoza does is to fuse holiness into our lives and into our existence. And the image is we are all part of a sea, a vast sea. And while we are real, just as every wave and ripple of an ocean is real and particular and exists for a time before that ripple and wave goes back into the sea, our particularity is real. I exist. You exist. We exist. We have duties, responsibilities, abilities, and we are a part of something greater. It is not that there is some strange other world out there that we can never reach at all, but a sense that we are joined and part of something. And it is not that the divine is out there, but in here, and in everything that we do and experience and uncover, and we are a part of it, of nature, of the divine, and not apart from it. That is an important alternative picture. Not an exclusive picture, not the only way to see things, but a way to bring together what seems to be fundamentally broken at times in the way that we relate to this beautiful world of ours. It is a beautiful world. It is a remarkable world. Rain falls from the sky. A thermonuclear implosion called the sun lights us and warms us and makes life possible. Our bodies can experience extraordinary joy and unspeakable, literally apparently, agony. We can be high and we can be brought low physically and spiritually, and I don't know how to take those apart from one another. Matter matters. This world, now, our being a part of it, are enjoying the light and the rain and the wind and the cold, are enjoying and being able to relate to those things that are broken that we can heal, those who stumble that we can help up, those who share imperfections with us that we can work together on healing. This is a wonderful, fragile miracle. This flash of light that we share right now, as the hymn indicated, this life that is in between those other things. And whatever is to come, as Hamlet says, yet 'twill come, I don't know. That's not my field. My field is today. It's what is in front of us to do. It is the people to welcome. It is the world to defend. It is freedom to proclaim. It is justice to do. And it is in these moments that we connect spirit and material existence as we reach out to make and affirm and experience the love that we can in these precious moments of light and of dark, in these cycles that we live through with each other, not alone, real in our individuality as the wave and part of an infinite sea in infinite time and space.